You're having bacon and eggs for breakfast on Fab FM.
And good morning to you on this Wednesday. Well, look, I've been excited about this, having a chat to Irene Thornton, former wife of Bon Scott. He was lead vocalist with AC/DC from 74 up until his death at 1980. It was just a terrible thing. I can always remember hearing the news about the passing of Bon Scott. And Irene's a lovely lady, and Jim Slade, a good mate of mine, arranged this interview this morning. Good morning, Irene.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, you were listening to that It's a Long Way to the Top if you want to rock and roll. You were hearing it through the phone there. Riding down the highway, going to a show. When you hear that, what goes through your mind?
I still see the video of Bon and the band on the truck in going down the streets in Melbourne.
That's right.
With Bon, which was a great film clip.
It was a great film clip with the bagpipes and everything. It was just iconic. It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll. Now, look, it's going to be the second question now, but I certainly wanted to start the interview by asking you, what's the most misunderstood thing in the public's eye, do you think, through the media or whatever? What do you think the biggest misconception is about Bon Scott?
I think probably the wild man image. It comes across as just, as a wild rock and roll, typical pop star. But he was actually had a lovely nature. Was great with kids, was very kindly and cheeky towards older people. For example, my grandmother and my mother. He always did the right thing around my mother. Another example is when we had to stay at my mum's place before we went over to England together in the band that Bon was with at the time, Fraternity. And Bon was always very polite and made sure that he was covered. And I remember him one morning, back at that time, I remember thinking this would make a great photo. This was before Bon was famous. He was making a cup of coffee with a dressing gown borrowed from my mum, with his long hair resting on his shoulders, making coffee at the sink, and it looked all wrong.
Absolutely.
That would be that wild man, rock and roll, tough guy image, because he was, he could be gentle, sweet and thoughtful and funny.
Yes, that's
But he could also be the larrikin and do unexpected things and think, oh no, there he goes again.
Yeah. Well, I've told this story on air before, but I'll just tell it while I'm talking to you. I had the great pleasure, a cameraman and myself went on tour with him when he was touring. It was in the 70s and he was touring around Bathurst and Orange, and the Bathurst mayor had actually banned AC/DC, saying that Satan, you know, was obviously behind the whole band and, giving the kids a dose of the devil, so to speak. And we were touring with them and we were staying in a motel, and myself and the cameraman went down and we thought, gee, how are we going to keep up with the band playing and Bond's such a wild man and all of that. And we sat on the bed and we had a chat, and Bon was the most gentle soul and surprised the hell out of me and the cameraman. Because, you know, he was, to me, and you tell me if this is correct, but he was very much the showman on stage, but off stage could come right back to being this very quietly spoken human being.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He was sort of very thoughtful, and he could be really funny. We both had a similar sense of humour, He was that gentle and decent person, although he did have that side where he would do something outrageous if he'd had a few drinks.
We'll come to that in a moment, his favourite drink. Just about anything that was alcoholic, as I understand. But let's talk about the first time you laid eyes on Bon Scott, right? So you were at a party in Adelaide.
Yeah.
What can you remember about that first time you laid eyes on Bon Scott?
I was taken to a party. I'd just got back from, I'd been in London for 12 months. I think I was only 20, and a friend of mine had said that she'd met this guy, Bon, and he was just really lovely, and he was, you know, all these things, and that he played in this band Fraternity, and they were having a party the next day, well, as I remember it, and would I go with her? So we did that, and we went up to this place in the Adelaide Hills, Crafers, I think it was, and one of the two places the band was renting, and it was just chock-a-block with people, really loud music. I think the band was on the music and...
Record player?
Yeah, that's the word. And Led Zeppelin was a bit of a favourite.
Yeah.
And then I was just sitting down. There was a sea of people around, and I was sitting next to my friend. And she said, then the crowd seemed to sort of part of drinkers as someone was staggering through it. And she said, "There he is, that's Bon." And I saw this drunk guy with really tight little denim shorts and a woman under his arm and him trying not to spill his drink with the other arm and no top on. And she said, "There he is, you know, isn't he gorgeous?" And I thought, hell no.
So it certainly wasn't love at first sight?
No, it wasn't. And then the next time I saw him, another friend of mine had a little downstairs ladies' boutique in Adelaide, and she was living with Vince Lovegrove, who was Bon's the front man in the Valentines, Bon's mate.
Yeah.
And I went down the stairs to visit her, and I was chatting away to her, and suddenly there was a thump and a crash, and I thought, what the hell has happened? And it was Bon rolling down the stairs to make a rolling head, just somersaulting down the stairs. And I thought he'd fallen and hurt. He just bounced up and said hi to Julie and kept on talking. And I thought, that was interesting.
So he just, this was part of meeting you.
Yeah, but he didn't take much notice of me. There were a couple of other girls there, and I think it was just, you know, a bit of a show-off thing. He must have seen a few women standing around and thought, I'll give it my best. I'll impress them all with this. Or I don't know what went through his head, really. Maybe he just felt like he needed a somersault down some wooden stairs.
Unbelievable. Now, so okay, there's a group of you there, and you're thinking, oh, God, who's this guy? But when did the others leave and you two sort of finally decide to go out on a date, so to speak?
Well, it was not at that point. It was I properly met him with Vince took me to see the band play down at the iconic Lags Pier Hotel, and Vince introduced me to him. Bon had been on stage, and Bon came up to say hello to Vince, and I remember Bon sort of he said hi to me, and all I could see was these really tight jeans that were just ridiculously tight. And I had a bit of a problem with foot and mouth disease, and I said, that's a well-packed lunch.
Oh.
And Bon looked at me and he said, without missing a beat, he said, yeah, two hard-boiled eggs and a sausage. And I just exploded with laughter. And then I got the message through Vince that Bon wanted to take me out, and we went to the drive-in together.
Of course.
Vince and his friend in the flea, of course. And we sat in the back, but we were just both bolt upright. Like, I was thinking, I don't know about this, and he must have been thinking, I don't know what was going through his head, but he was really sort of polite, and we sort of made awkward conversation when we did, and then he thanked me for coming out with him very politely when I was taken back home, walked me to the door. And I thought, I'm very confused.
But he could be, I know you said he had that wild side, but he could be an absolute gentleman, couldn't he?
Yeah, so I had flowers sent to my work, and I thought, no one had ever given me flowers in my lifetime, of my 20 years.
Yeah.
And I was just very confused by them. I thought, what does that mean? I didn't sort of ever know anyone that gave me flowers, as I said, and yeah, then he was very thoughtful.
Well, he obviously got on very well with your family, particularly your mother as well. There came a time, did he actually, when he proposed, did he go down on the knee? Did he do it the traditional way, or how did he propose to you?
No, the he'd always said that the band was going to England. They had a manager, Hamish, at the time. They'd won, I think it was a Battle of the Bands.
Yeah, Hoadley's Battle of the Bands.
Yeah, Hoadley's Battle of the Bands.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, well, you know, it'll be see you later sort of thing. And Hamish was paying for the wives that would go. And I thought, well, you know, that's not going to happen. And but unbeknownst to me, Bond kept nagging, you know, saying, I really want you to come, I really want you to come. And I'd just be evasive about it and say, look, it's not happening. And then Bond said to me one day, I've been to see Hamish and he's going to pay for you to come to England. And then he said, I was nearly going to propose to you, but I thought that you'd run a mile. And I said, but I wouldn't have.
Ooh.
And he said, you're kidding, really? And so, so then it was on. So
that's fantastic. What a great story.
Yeah, so then he announced it to all at the Largs Pier that night and lots of slaps on the back and, you know, all this sort of stuff. But we were seeing each other every minute that we could see each other, and with lots of laughter, we just had a great time together. And you know, I really loved him. And as I think back at him, you know, I still have the feelings for him.
Yeah.
But probably, you know, in a different way over all these years. But I can see why I cared about him so much.
Did you? I mentioned to Jim Slade, and he didn't know about them. Are you aware of that? Those little interviews, tiny interviews, not great quality, but interviews that were on the Vault album on the last track?
No.
Okay. Well, let me inform you. Somebody told me yesterday, I was doing some research for this interview, and somebody said, look, Paul, if you go to the Vault album, go to the very last track of the Vault album. That came out in the 90s. It was a mixture of different songs from AC/DC with Bond. And at the end of this track, there is quite a bit of silence, and then you'll find some little interview pieces. And I just went, what? And so I went, right, I'll find the Vault album, went into the computer, found the Vault album. I've got all of the albums of AC/DC from the beginning to now. And there, at the last track, there is silence and then these little interview pieces. And it's quite amazing. I'll play them. I'll play a piece for you. But one of the actual tracks where he's talking says, and right at the end he says, I there was a woman I loved, but she left me. That's at the end of that track. So Bond must have been very much in love with you, Irene. You said you were in love with him. He was very much in love with you. So that, does that surprise you? Had you ever heard that little piece of interview?
No, I hadn't.
All right. But obviously I think you were the love of his life. That's what I think.
Yeah, that sort of makes me feel a bit sad, actually.
I'm sorry. But, I don't mean to make you sad.
No, it wouldn't have worked out as I could see down the track that I would have been left behind at some stage anyway.
Sure.
And the last time I saw him, I was pregnant with and I had a new partner, and Bond stayed the night and they met each other and got along great.
But it was great that you were still friends. I understand you were friends right through.
Yeah, we was the last time I saw him was 6 weeks before he died, and I was pregnant. And there would often be a phone call would just come out of the blue, or letters would just we kept writing right to the end, and yeah, you'd suddenly get a call from him, and I'd think, oh, that'll be Bond, and. I think he turned up the last time on, would have been New Year's Day. We went to visit someone, that is in 1980.
Yeah.
And we went to visit someone, and there was a big crate, a box of alcohol left at the front door for anyone to pinch. And I said, that will be Bond, and he'll be back to drink it.
Yeah, he drank everything, didn't he?
Yeah.
But anyway, look, I'll play these to you. As I said, I only discovered them last night, and they're called the secret recordings because most people would just play the album. They'd play the last song and then take the album off, whether it be a CD or whatever. You take it out of your car. You'd have to wait for this silence to end, which is quite an amount of silence, and then they have these little tracks. But I, thanks to the mate that I rang, I now know about it. But anyway, look, I'll play them for you. The quality is not terrific. First one, he's talking about a radio station promo that he heard on the air. And then the very last one is where he talks about somebody that he loved, but she left him. And I'll let you hear them now. This is the first time that you're actually hearing those. Is that correct, Irene?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll just play them for you.
Yeah, we went to a station last year on the road, and their line was the rock station without the noise, you know?
Yeah.
What's rock without noise? You can't have that. There's no such thing.
We go to England about the second week in January, and we write and record until about March, and then we start touring about April.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't say exactly when our next American gig was, like the next time we start here. Hopefully it's good. Hopefully the band's still alive then. We might all die from malnutrition and exhaustion. The exercise is one thing, burning out's another.
The whole string of concerts headlining as big as this one is today, you know. Why settle for anything less? I mean, you know, the more people they can give us out front, the harder we play, you know? So, you know, shit. And, you know, it's 9:10:30 in the morning and there's 50,000 people out there and you look out and you think, wow, I got to kick ass today. And you get out there and you do it, no matter how tired, what you've done the night before, like you just get out there and you see this crowd and you go, shoot. I'm more in love with rock and roll, that glows, you know. I'm more in love with a couple of things, but, you know, I was in love with one, but she left me.
There you are, Irene.
Yeah.
Wow. I was in love with the woman. So he was very much in love with you, for sure. When 1980 came, and of course we heard, how did you hear about the death of Bon, and what was your reaction? I mean, it would have been obviously shock.
I got a call from Perth from Bon's sister-in-law, Val, who was married to Bon's brother, Derek, and she said to me, I've got bad news. She said, Ron's dead. They called him Ron in his family. Now and again, Bon, I'd hear Bon and the family. Anyway, that, it was just a very unbelievable shock. You know, I was just disbelief. And then the realisation and the enormous feeling of shock and sadness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're still feeling that today. Oh, I mean, when people become part of your life, you never forget them. They're always part of you in some way. And I think Bond's death was so sad, you know, in that vehicle overnight. And, you know, word was that he died of hypothermia, which was unbelievable, that he'd been drinking and what have you. I mean, it was a terrible way to go out. I'm sure Bond would not have picked that as a way to exit the world.
Yeah, it was just lonely and cold and left in a car overnight. No, it's just terrible.
No, it is terrible. But look, you've written a wonderful book, and I know Jim Slade, our friend Jim Slade, has helped you a lot with this. When you started to put pen to paper with this book, and it's called, it's had another title, but its current title is Have a Drink on Me. When you first put pen to paper, what did you want to achieve with this book?
I'd always kept little notes and things that he said that were funny, and I just would write them down over the years in case, I don't know why, but in case I ever forgot them, or in case I decided to do a book, which I didn't think would ever happen, actually. And there are a lot of things that with another book that came out, and I actually went through it and I thought, that's not right. That didn't happen. Or that's not right, you know. And a lot of it went through my head that I just want to write the truth as how I see it and what happened, you know, and not someone sort of made up of events, because there was something that involved me with Bon, and it was a complete untruth about, and you know, how we'd split up and anyway, the things
anyway,
that I
what,
wanted
to, what,
and about these bike accidents.
Yeah.
He was supposedly to have had ridden away on this. The first thing that sort of really stood out to me, and I thought, that didn't happen, that he'd ridden away after an argument with me on this great big motorbike. Well, he hadn't had an argument with me, because at the time we'd come back from England and we'd actually split up. It was 6 weeks, and I hadn't heard from him except seeing him one day when I was with Vince, and Vince wanted to drop something off to him, and we had a little conversation. So he hadn't had an argument with me, and the second thing was, it wasn't a great big motorbike. It was a Suzuki 550, and it made it out to sound like he had this massive thing with a tiny little speck of Bon on it. So it wasn't after an argument. That's the first thing. And then how we'd split up, you know, that was that didn't happen that way either. So,
So what was said about the split up, that it was a nasty split up, when in actual fact it wasn't?
We were sort of back together, although things weren't the same. I was looking after him because he would have had no one to look after him at the time. I was working, but I took some days off work when he came out of hospital after the terrible accident, where he'd been in a coma for 3 days, and he had a broken collarbone and his jaw was wired up, and he was, I can't remember how many weeks he was in hospital. I'd have to think about that again.
Just Irene, just to remind people about that accident, what happened to him?
During the time that we'd split up, he was staying at the bass player, Bruce, and his wife Anne, and their child, who was born when we were in England. And he had an argument it was at a band practice, I believe, and he'd had an argument with a member of the band, and Vince Lovegrove confirmed this with me, that we talked about it. And apparently he'd broken threw a bottle of scotch. I'm not sure if that was added to the story or... But anyway, he'd ridden off on his bike to go back to the place he was living at with the bass player, and he was drunk. And this is in Adelaide, in Port Adelaide. I think it was the Rosetta Street corner, where he came to grief and hit a car. So...
Oh.
I looked after him after the accident, even though we'd split up. And Bon's mum was lovely. She came over from Perth and stayed with Bon while I went back to work. And then after, it was when we split up, I don't know, did you want to ask me to go ahead with that story, or?
Yeah, well, it is the truth, isn't it? And that's the main thing. And when I asked you that initial question about why you wrote the book, obviously you wanted to clear up a whole lot of myths and tell the truth. And we want to know the truth about Bon Scott. Everybody has a little bit of Bon Scott in their heart if they grew up in that era, and they love AC/DC as I do, and many other people love AC/DC. We've got a bit of Bon in our heart as well, and we want the truth to be told, for sure.
Yeah. Well, during the time that Bon was back living with me, I went back to work, and we went out one night. Vince took us out. Vince Lovegrove was booking bands through a company that he had in Adelaide at the time. This is Vince, who was in the Valentines with Bon previously, was also living in Adelaide. And he said, I've got this great band. Bon was on the mend too, by the way, at this stage. And Vince took us to see this band, AC/DC, and Bon just loved them, and he got up to sort of was dead or pushed, but you didn't have to push Bond much. He just more or less had it holding back. He was up there with him. And I don't remember what he was singing at the time, whether it was Gloria or Johnny B. Goode. I can't remember. It was one of the old standards, but it was so much fun. They were all enjoying themselves. And then Bond had an offer down the track. He had been driving these guys around, I should add. I'd bought an old SB Holden for Bond to get around a bit in as he was recovering and seeing quite a bit of Vince and helping Vince out with his doing bits of painting and things. And he'd been driving these guys around. And down the track after rehearsals and things, they asked him to join. And Bond rang me at work and said, they've asked me to join. And I said, and we discussed, you know, getting a transfer interstate for me with my job. I had a public service job at the time. And so Bond went off on his merry way with them. And then he was coming back to do the first one with a first one in Adelaide with the band.
Yeah.
And I knew that he was coming back that day, but. And I was going to meet him, this was at the Largs Pier again, and I was going to meet him at the Largs Pier after I finished work and got ready, that sort of thing. And then I noticed, I was renting a house at the time with my sister, who was, I noticed that the rent money was gone from the drawers. That was my responsibility and Faye's responsibility. And... I was just furious that he would just help himself to the money. You know, I mean, if he'd asked me, I would have given to him, but
yep.
Just that he'd done that. And I think with all these other things that had happened in the past in our lives where I'd been responsible for everything and he wasn't the main contributor. He was, you know, he was a musician or having a good time anyway. Because of the background and everything, and I just was so angry. I got straight down to the Largs Pier, and as soon as he was off stage, I was out there yelling at him. You know, how could you do this? You know, luckily they couldn't hear.
Everybody be saying, "Hello, the missus is here."
Yeah, that's right. Hands on the. Well, it was pretty crowded and packed, but otherwise it would have been the hands on the hips and the rolling pin.
Yeah, exactly.
exaggeration. So look, I was so upset, and he didn't come home that night. Oh. Next day, he came back and threw the money at me and said, "I'm off."
Okay.
And I had to give in a little quip and say to him, I think, no, my sister actually said, don't let him take the good suitcase. So I said,
What a lot of memories. It's just wonderful. Well, just letting people know, the book is called Have a Drink on Me. It's available online through Red Planet Zone. And we'll make sure on our Facebook page, Irene, that we put that up so that people know where to purchase the book. I can't wait to read it. And I thank you for your time this morning. I know it's a trip down memory lane, sometimes just a little bit painful. But we thank you for your time this morning.
Oh, thanks very much, Paul. I hope I didn't waffle on too much.
No, you're terrific. And it's such a wonderful thing to have an insight into someone's life. And I really applaud you for wanting the truth to be out there. And particularly, can you imagine, like, social media these days, the rubbish that comes up? I mean, just recently with Olivia Newton-John saying that she was at death's door. And, of course, she's not. People make up stuff about people.
Yeah.
And I think it's awful.
They do. It's unbelievable. You know, I've read a couple of things here and there, and I'm thinking, oh, that didn't happen, but what can you do?
Well, what you can do is write a book, and that's exactly what you did. Thank you for your time. I'm sure the listeners absolutely loved it. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.